Episode 3, Failure. Sunday evening, one unread message. Subject line, you have 0 appointments for Monday, October 5th. I guess I'll work on the book tomorrow, I think to myself. Monday evening, new unread message. Subject line, you have 0 appointments for Tuesday, October 6th. Guess tomorrow's going to be an admin day, think to myself. Tuesday evening, new unread message. You have 0 appointments. Delete. Wednesday evening, new unread message. Mike, don't even look. Well, maybe just open one eye a tiny bit and take a quick peek, and you have 0. Delete. So, early on after setting out on my present entrepreneurial adventure, after an unexpected COVID-induced massive pivot in business model and direction of my life, every night at 7 p.m., I could look forward to receiving an email from sender, Squarespace Scheduling, subject line, you have 0 appointments for insert tomorrow's date. So I often mused to myself that one evening I'd open the inbox to a subject line that read, you have 0 evidence that you are anything but an abysmal failure. Like the machine intelligence going rogue in some sci-fi movie. Audience knows something's up, but the main character still seems oblivious to the lurking evil. Cut to main character smashing laptop in a fit of growing insanity, followed by machine intelligence calmly and suspiciously addressing him on a first name basis. Michael, you don't seem yourself. Michael, I'm here to help. Michael, I can get you appointments. Michael. So here's a question for you. How many weeks do you think it took me before I changed my settings to unsubscribe from this particular daily update about tomorrow's appointment schedule? A week? 2 weeks? Cold. 4 weeks? Warmer. 6 weeks? Warmer. 7 weeks? Hot. All right, enough already. 8 weeks of these soul-crushing notification emails. So why on earth did it take me so long to unsubscribe? Because part of me, strange as it may seem, thought it might somehow be motivating. And I suppose a part of me, naive as it may seem, also thought the number of appointments would climb a lot faster than they did. So those two parts of me conspired to subject me to a sort of self-imposed daily flogging. Like I was freshman scum and those emails were the fraternity brother's paddle on which this mentally unwell quote-unquote brother had painstakingly carved the words, you are completely inadequate, in raised backwards letter on the front of the paddle. And of course, stuck a bunch of bumper stickers on the other side declaring his fan status of various college bands, his love of fishing, and his visit to OBX. Here's something I learned. You don't need reminders of your failures, especially daily reminders. That seems like a pretty obvious point I'm sharing. But is it? Because what I've seen is that almost all of us do something just like this to ourselves all the time. Except instead of the beating we subject ourselves to coming from some overgrown man-child fraternity brother or from the thoughtless auto-generated emails from Squarespace Scheduling, the beatings come from the most intimate of our relationships, the voice in our heads. You are your biggest critic. The problem is, and it slides right past you most of the time without you catching it. You believe it. The voice slips in. It whispers in your ear. Then it slips out the door. And it leaves you there to soak with it. Says things like, you aren't working hard enough. Tells you, you should be more like him or more like her. Tells you, you're coming up short. Tells you scary stories about your future if you don't follow what it says to do. Fundamentally, it tells you, you're not enough. Now, this voice is trying to protect you. It goes about it in a strange way, but it thinks it's motivating you to behave in a way that prevents you from having to relive things that were painful or uncomfortable in the past. It claims it has the answer that you need to solve the various dilemmas of your life and to, you know, the subtext is, I will guide you into your definition of the promised land. Now, funny thing is, this voice has been in your ear attempting to guide you your entire life. So has it delivered on its promise yet? The entrepreneurial journey for me has been a constant tango with this inner critic. It's brought me through a rapid fire of failures, the journey has, and failure has become, I'd say, practically a daily encounter in form, one form or another. I've tried so many things that haven't worked. I've reached out to so many people. I've tugged on threads that led to nowhere. And sometimes it's difficult to describe to somebody who's never been there before exactly the kind of stamina it takes to get knocked down and to get up again over and over. There's a lot I can say about this kind of defeat. Sometimes you invest a lot of yourself into something, and when it comes up short, it stings. It's usually only with distance that you can look back on some of those things and say, you know, maybe actually it's good that it didn't work out. Not like in some sour grapes kind of way, but you see that that may have swallowed you into a path that wasn't really yours to travel. You know, failure's tough, but success at the wrong thing can lock you into that wrong thing for a long time. I've also come to see failure as a process of preparation. Like, for example, on one level, it's just straight up humbling. I've spent most of my career working in the senior-most realms of corporate America, and I have been continually amazed at the magnitude of ego that you find there, especially at the very top. I see it actually as one of the reasons behind many of the problems that keep perpetuating in corporate America, although there are so many others. And I wonder if this enormity of ego is in part a product of too much success on someone's rise to the top. Without failure to ground you, you begin to believe your own hype. You see this pattern of success and start to attribute most of its causes to you, your talent or your skill or your experience or your intelligence. And you begin overlooking the role luck plays or the support of others or any number of things that have played some big role in your success. Almost always, those things have been much bigger drivers than any of us admit. I suspect the reason for this presence of ego is also a selection bias. You know, people who are making the decisions of who to install select for these typical models of leader, those who exude confidence or bravado, those who seem tough or who know what's best or who always have the answer. As a leader, I tended to tip in the other direction. I was much more prone to imposter syndrome or to feeling like an unlikely leader. It took me a long time to begin to see that perhaps my greatest strengths as a leader were linked to my genuine humility because I knew I didn't know. And so it was natural for me to lean on others, to surround myself with people who are better than me in many ways, and to build those people up so they could keep taking on more and more. Still, even as someone who tipped in the direction of imposter syndrome, even I can see I'm benefiting from this humbling process. It's still doing its work on me. It's hollowing me out. It's grounding me. It's opening me up. It's a little difficult to describe. On one hand, it could be very exhausting, but there's almost a shift in energy that I can now see has been happening under the surface. So I wish you success, but I have to say, I cannot help but also wish you your own version of this kind of preparatory phase and the uncomfortable but formative work that it does on your psyche. Because beyond the humbling, and the shift in energy I described, both of which I see as very valuable, there's another really important way that this kind of phase does its work on you. And that is how it changes your relationship to the notion of failure. Let me tell you, it's easy to sit on the sidelines or in the bleachers to be the armchair coach who shares optimistic platitudes about failure. They aren't failures, they're experiments. You aren't failing when you're learning. If it doesn't kill you, it only makes you stronger. Don't you think I've given myself pep talks like this? Of course. But they're hollow when they come from the rational mind. It doesn't matter if you know something is true with your mind. Do you know it's true with your body, with your very being itself? If not, it's nothing more than sugarcoating. It's like a false attempt to seek a silver lining, an attempt to deny the pain that your emotional body feels. For example, when my son comes home after losing a basketball game in overtime, I can tell him, it's okay, there's always next week, or you played hard, or losing toughens you up, or whatever parenting nonsense wants to flow through my mouth. But that's just a denial of what he feels. Losing sucks. It's okay to feel that for a bit. Let it do its work on you. Let your body and mind come to right relationship with that experience, which is where the real shift takes place. One loss, it's small in the scheme of things, might lead to the tiniest, subtle shift. And it probably isn't going to take away the sting of the next loss. But little by little, those things do their work on you. The shift that's most essential that I'm learning can only come from walking a path like this is a felt recognition, a felt truth. You can call your failures failures, or experiments, or attempts, or tries, or learning. I don't even want to place too much emphasis on the words or fall into the trap of thinking we can positive psychology our way out of feeling uncomfortable feelings. The felt recognition, the felt truth I'm speaking of is this. It is a deep knowing that this is the right kind of failure. The wrong kind of failure is not taking a risk. It's not trying something in the first place. The wrong kind of failure is not living this life with a sense of boldness. It's not answering the call. The wrong kind of failure is living a bland life. It's being a slave to desires that you inherited from the way you were brought up or from society, but you never question them. The wrong kind of failure is living a life that isn't truly authentic, that isn't totally yours, unedited by the pressures of conforming to limitations that do not fit who you are. The wrong kind of failure is living a life and not feeling fully alive. There is only one way to avoid this wrong kind of failure, and it's to pursue a path that is ripe with the right kind of failure. Get your ass out of the bleachers and get on the field. Quit living small. Quit being so afraid of other people and what they might think. Stop swallowing your words so much. Say what's on your mind. And more importantly, say what's in your heart. Say it kindly and with respect and listen more than you speak, but say it. If this sounds like preaching, know that these are words I speak to myself from the field. I speak them to that voice inside, the one we talked about earlier, the one that likes to say, hey, wouldn't it be nice to take a little break and chill in the bleachers with a beverage and some nachos? Maybe, but I think I'll stay right here on the field, thanks.